The Gulf Coast Growth Show is sponsored by Chevron Pasadena Refinery and is an extension of the Economic Alliance Houston Port Region, where our mission is to market and grow a vibrant regional economy.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Gulf Coast Growth Show. I'm your host, Jason Lee, and my co-host, Zeke Smith.
What's up, Jason? Welcome back.
Glad to have you today. And we are joined by Thomas Damsgaard, a friend of mine, who is from the head of, or he's the head of America's BIMCO here, in, or not really here, in, you're here in Houston, but you guys are a global organization. Glad to have you today, Thomas.
Thank you so much, Jason, for having me.
And Thomas, BIMCO is an international organization that's focused on maritime, and we're going to spend some time talking about your background and its background. But the objective of the show is to talk about the maritime's impact on clean shipping and really the environment, because that seems to be an important topic right now, sure. As well as really Houston being one of the really the capital when it comes to maritime logistics here in the U.S. So we're going to tackle those two topics. But before we dive in, Thomas, tell us a little bit about BIMCO, their background, really their footprint, and then tell us a little bit about your history.
Sure. Thank you. And again, thank you so much for having me here today. BIMCO is the world's largest maritime organization. We have about 63% of the world's fleet as our members. It's a non-for-profit organization established in 1905 in the Baltic region. And it was 8 ship owners that was doing the timber trade of transporting lumber within the Baltic region, which is, you know, in the Scandinavian countries. And they were realizing that they were competing each other out of the market on terms. And they came together and they said, listen, why don't we come up with a set, standardized set of terms on which to trade, and then we can compete on rates. And that's where it all started in 1905. In 1908, they created the first, what we call a charter party, which is a transportation contract. And still today, that is the cornerstone of what BIMCO does, standardization of trading terms, contract clauses. We have it as an open platform. So it's open to the industry, free of charge to use.
Wow.
And like I said, we are non-for-profit. We are about 80 employees globally within the organization, but then we have more than 500 volunteers from our members that are actually help developing these contracts and support the work that we are doing. We are the world's largest, which also means that we represent the biggest part of the world fleet whenever it comes to regulations. So the IMO, and I know we're going to be talking a little bit about the environment today, and the International Maritime Organization, IMO, is playing a significant role in that, of course. We do a lot of training. We do a lot of support and advice to the industry as a whole, both technical advice, but of course also contractual legal advice. So yeah, that's kind of in the nut what BIMCO is about. So I've been working with the organization since I started in maritime in 1990. Wow. So yeah.
So when you talk about this contractual, I guess for the layman, right, the person who's not maritime, what's the significance of that? I mean, I guess globally, is it because I'm in the U.S. and maybe I'm trying to do something in international waters or over in their region, or is that why you have to have kind of a database or resource of these things? Like, what's the premise for somebody who doesn't understand what you're saying when you say, well, contracts and terms? Well, translate that to our audience on where we would see that and or how it's used in your industry.
Yeah. No, it's a very good question. So global trade, it is global. It's international. When we look at shipping, we are the ones that are connecting this global trade where we are moving stuff from China to the U.S. Again, we saw a brilliant example of it during the pandemic where we say no shipping, no shopping. All of a sudden, we had no goods on the shelves here because there was no ships moving or the cargo was not moving.
Right.
So when we are looking at global trade, we deal with numerous different jurisdictions. So you have a ship that might be registered in Monrovia. You have a crew that is coming from the Philippines or captains that are coming from European countries. You're loading cargo in one country. It could be in China, and you're discharging another country. It could be in the Port of Houston in the U.S. All different regulations. So in order to get this global trade harmonized, you know, in a commercial sense, you have these what we call charter parties or booking notes, which is between a shipper or a cargo interest and then a ship owner that is carrying this cargo. And this is what we do. We create these contract forms. It's standardized And then they go into a commercial process where you have the negotiations going on, and then they come to an agreement on these contracts. The benefit of having standardized contracts is that over time, as dispute occurs, you will actually have you'll have these contracts tested legally. So you actually know what these contract terms mean in the context of global trade as well, too. Wow. So it's a way to de-risking operation in global trade to use these standardized forms that have proven themselves over time and through jurisdictions.
Do you all offer, or do members come to you all for arbitration, mediation kind of services as well, or that's stay out of that business?
So we have, for our members, so we are having about 2,100 members globally. 800 of them are the owner, the carrier side, and then a little more than 1,000 members are the other service company in the industry. And all our members have access to our support and advice services, where we have a slew of lawyers. We are maritime experts on cargo, on security, on technical matters as well, too. And they have access to that knowledge base within our membership. So to your question, our members will come to us leading up to a negotiation. What contract form do I need to use? We have about 350 contracts and clauses that we have developed in our library. So what contract to use? As they're getting into the negotiations, and again, this is commercial business, willing buyer and willing seller, depending on how strong the market is, you know, one is going to be stronger than the other in the negotiation process. So sometimes you have parties insisting on certain clauses. So they will, our members will come to us and say, you know what does this clause actually mean? Should I insist on it? Or is this one that is not that relevant to this particular trade
right.
that I'm negotiating right now? So they'll get that advice. When the carriage then happens, the cargo is loaded on board the ship, sometimes disputes still happen for whatever reason. They will come and say, you know, I have this dispute here. Where do I stand? And this is where we go back and then rely on previous case law, what has been tested in arbitrations.
Yeah.
Many arbitrations are private, so they're not, you don't have access to the pub, but there's some jurisdictions out there where you can access arbitration awards, of course, and you can see how these clauses and contracts are being tested.
Right.
So our members then will come and seek that advice to resolve the dispute before it becomes, you know, it ends up in the legal process. And then we still have cases where you do end up with disputes and it ends up going to arbitration. And then when the award is then issued, our members will come to us and ask us to help them collect the awards. We are not providing arbitration. We're not providing mediation. I'm a former president, actually, for the Houston Maritime Arbitrators Association. We have a very strong arbitration association here in Houston, non-managed systems. So we, of course, trying to promote arbitration within our jurisdiction in this city here in the contracts as well, too. But
We don't engage in that. Name, but like it's logistics industry, but there's so much logistics within just what you guys do, right? All the different
all the entities, pieces, the rules, different countries, all that. It's crazy to think about how much it's unbelievable to think about that. And then you're like one of the most interesting men in the world. I mean, so we got to hear a little bit about your story.
Tell us about this West Texas accent you got here, where you came from, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I was thinking he was part of the Cajun Nation.
Yeah, Southern Louisiana.
Maritime, you know? Absolutely. So how did you get into this place?
Yeah, I guess the accent gives it away. I'm not from around here, right? But but I got here as fast as I could.
There you go.
Born and raised in Denmark, actually,
okay.
Which is a big seafaring nation. Even though the city, the country is like 5 million people. It's less than what you have in the city of Houston, right? I started in 1990 with a shipping company over there. Go back a little bit. Back in the 80s, I was an exchange student over here. I came to the U.S. when I was 16 years old, lived with a family up in Washington State.
Oh, wow.
And fell in love with the U.S. and I knew I wanted to come back here one day. And that opportunity was opened up in 1992. I worked with a company called Clipper Shipping. They're still around today, a market leader within bulk shipping. They have an office in Houston as well, too. An opportunity opened up for me to come over here, and I moved to Houston. And 30 years later, I'm still here.
Yeah.
And it's just been a progression, professional progression for me, being part of startups over here, and then also engaging very deep within the industry. Like I said, the Houston Maritime Arbitrators Association. I run a non-for-profit fundraiser here as well, too, for maritime scholarship. I've been doing for 15 years. As well too for all the ship owners and the operators for an annual event here as well too, and just basically leaning in and engaging as much as this city needs when it comes to maritime affairs. Yeah.
When you think of people who just embody what they do and it just bleeds down into their lifestyle and sure. who they know and people that they connect with, I've gotten to know Thomas and it's just evident because he's plugged into so many different companies, organizations, but they all. Kind of like you in construction, you just love it, and you're always plugged into it. It's great to see people who are living in their really in their calling. And I think you're one of those folks. So why don't we shift gears a little bit, talk a little bit about some of the topics that you wanted to cover today. I think the first one being the importance around the environment, green, and really kind of the cleanliness of what's happening in shipping, and maybe the progress that's been taking place over there. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So. One of the big things behind getting BIMCO to open up here in the U.S. was to be able to, and we just opened the office here in June last year. It's been a 10-12 year project actually. We have a bunch of stakeholders, maritime stakeholders in Houston that has been trying to convince BIMCO to both open up in the Americas, but also to plant the flag here in Houston and not doing it in the Northeast, which would have been the first inclination for them. You know, Stamford, New York, traditionally, historically been a big maritime center. But one of the reasons why we wanted to bring BIMCO over here is to address some of the big challenges that our industry is faced with. And it's right now, it's all around ESG, environmental, social, and governance. And the E has a really big, takes a lot of oxygen out of the room there, no pun intended. Just waking up this morning to see the updated hurricane forecast for the second half of this year for us, you know, now our probability is 60% of major hurricanes. There is things happening to the environment. There's no doubt about it. Shipping owns about 3% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions right now. If we do not do anything within shipping and global maritime, this by 2050 will grow to about 11% of the world's CO2.
Wow.
So we need to address it. The IMO, International Maritime Organization, based out of London, a UN entity, has just come out here in July, first week of July this year, with a new strategy for shipping, where we're going to try and decarbonize the industry by 2050, totally. By 2040, we're going to cut down our emissions by about 70%. And that's 17 years out from now. That is not that long. No. And you're talking about taking an entire industry and basically doing this quantum shift. Again, we haven't seen this shift, this transformation, since we went from sailing ships to coal-fired steamers, right?
Right.
And that's more than 100 years ago. So this is what we are faced with right now. And it is becoming the U.S.'s signatory to these regulations coming out of the IMO as well too. So this is something that we are going to adopt and adapt over here as well too. Not just as a seafaring nation, and we don't have that many US flagships, but also in what we call a port state, where we have all these foreign ships coming in. So you will see the Coast Guard being out there and enforcing these environmental and emission standards.
How do your members feel about this? They feel like this is realistic to do, or is it just another government? Somebody's talking on both sides of their mouth, or feel like this is something that's real and we can do?
That it's a very good question, actually, because this has been brewing for some years now, and we don't feel as an industry, we do not feel that the IMO has been ambitious enough. We don't feel that the earlier regulation that came out had teeth enough to really meet the emission standards that the industry requires in order to decarbonize. However, this new strategy that is coming out with this reduction of 70% by 2040 is very ambitious. It's very ambitious, but at least it is making the transition investable now, because now we know what the regulations are, we know what the end goal is. And that's one thing I would say with shipping. Like I indicated before, it's a it's an we are operating in an environment where we're dealing with numerous different regulations. We are dealing with piracy off the coast of Somalia, right? You're dealing with drug trades, you're dealing with all. It's a very, very complex environment to run a business in, right? So we are used to working in that risky environment. We are used to coming up with solutions to it. And you see ship owners out there and operators out there, they have a very pragmatic, a very practical approach, as long as we know what the target and the goal is. And we have that now. So you will see new technology coming out. You see new ships being built with new ship designs. You see new propulsions. We need a new supply chain. And this is where Houston is playing a really significant role, where you see new supply chains with new fuels coming out, whether it's on hydrogen, ammonia, or methanol. We're even seeing, like I mentioned earlier, this is the biggest shift since we went from wind to coal-fired boilers. We're actually even seeing wind playing a role again now with these rotor sails that are going on top of ships that is able to improve the efficiency by about 10 to 15% as well too. So using old technology, but putting on some new bottles as well too. The cool thing about it is, and this is what we need to keep in mind also, while we are trying to decarbonize the industry and create a cleaner environment, at the same time, it also becomes smart business. So it rolls straight to the bottom line. So it is, this efficiency makes company more profitable.
Got it. So as it becomes more efficient, it hits the bottom line. So people are actually motivated to do it, right? Because I think a lot of cases, especially when you're dealing with so many different micro economies scattered throughout inside of one industry, you're going to have people who are going to champion the stuff because they have deeper pocketbooks, perhaps, than the people who are going to say, I'm trying to pinch pennies over here and we don't want to get there. But if you can show them that it impacts the bottom line, then there's a chance everybody gets on board.
Yeah. Again, ESG has had a tendency, and it still does, to be a regulatory thing. So it's the check-the-box exercise, or it becomes a marketing exercise. It looks good, what we call greenwashing, right? What we really need to, we need to translate this into make a good financial sense. And it's everything from the environment. It is also in the social part. We are looking a lot about diversity, you know, getting more females into our industry. Right now, we only have 2% females employed within maritime on board the ships. And we have a shortage of seafarers. We cannot crack that knot without by excluding 50% of the workforce, right? But the interesting thing is that the initial indicators are from some of the technical and crew managers of these ships that as they're putting more females on board the ship, the number of incidents, so safety incidents, health incidents, are actually dropping.
Huh.
And we have even seen some technical managers saying they have indicators that there's actually better performance on the ship. So now diversity on board the ship does not become about meeting some standards and it looks good on the glossy paper and marketing campaigns, right? Now it actually becomes good financial sense.
Right.
And what I like to think about again here, our wives, they pay less in car insurance than we do because they're less of a risk. They're better drivers, 100%. Right?
Yeah, my wife would tell me that a thousand times.
So why does that not translate to the ships? Of course it does. So that's the process. This is the transformation we're going through right now. Which is really exciting, actually.
Yeah.
So you mentioned coming to Houston, right? The significance of trying to go avoid New York and get down here to Houston. Talk to us about the significance of our city when it comes to maritime globally.
Yeah. So I'll go back to opening up BIMCO down here. Again, BIMCO historically and traditionally, like I said, it was 8 ship owners that started in 1905, has been perceived as a ship owner organization. U.S. is not a big maritime power to be reckoned with globally for various reasons. So it hasn't been that attractive, but there's still to every contract, there's two parties. There's an owner and then there's a cargo interest.
Right.
And we're still controlling about 26% of the world trade out of the U.S., right? When you are having LNG plants put in Australia or in West Africa, Angola and stuff, The projects are controlled here and it's actually controlled in our city.
Right.
Right. The cargo might never touch U.S. soil. Again, it might come from Italy and then going to West Africa.
But the buying decisions are made here.
But the decisions are made here.
Absolutely.
The brains, sitting and managing these engineering, procurement, constructions is sitting here as well too. And that's why, and especially for Houston, that's why it's such a significant part. Besides that, and again, I'm an immigrant. I moved to this country here in 1992. Houston is the city that is most diverse in North America. Anybody that follows Professor Kleinberg from Rice University and his demographic study for more than 30 years know that we are the picture of how the rest of the U.S. is going to be 10 years from now. But what do immigrants come for? They come to make the American dream, right? So you get this very entrepreneurial spirit down here. You get this very can-do attitude. You get a city that is full of engineers. Engineers solves problems.
Right.
Right. And it carries over into the service industry as well, too. And this is one of the unique things, I think, that we have in Houston and that that we are leveraging within maritime as well, too. And that's why it's really exciting to then now get this global significant toolbox from BIMCO here, of course, servicing all of North America and also South America, but nevertheless, sitting here, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think that I've noticed, in not knowing much about the maritime industry, the recent growth and exposure that are out there with high school outreach, with Houston Pilots Association, we've had them on before, and all the things they're doing with scholarships and outreach and trying to be in front of the high schools and promote the program, because we want to be the preeminent port city in the United States or in the world, right, globally. Certainly the largest port in the country, so, and about to be bigger. So there's no reason that this industry should be so underrepresented or underexposed or underadvertised the way it is. So I'm glad that there's folks like you, spokeswomen out there getting the word out. Because we talk about construction and oil and gas and petrochem. It's like, sure, but we can't do any of that without the maritime industry getting the materials and things we need here to do it, right? And getting them out.
Getting it out again.
That's right.
Exactly. So. But a lot of it starts with labor as well, too, right? And we have Texas A&M in Galveston, you know, that is training a lot of maritime graduates. We're seeing more and more companies there that are starting these European-based trainee programs, bringing in people and bringing them up in the industry.
Right.
I'm working on an initiative right now with Rice and my old alma mater from Copenhagen Business School on a blue MBA, where we're going to start working on some commercial maritime executive education here as well too, because we need to bring the knowledge level up. Again, this, like I said, it's not just about compliance anymore. It's really about competency building. Right. And we got to get that competency level up as well, too. So there's a lot of really exciting things going on in this city within maritime. So,
that's exciting. Yeah. Well, you know, your passion for it shows, and I can tell that because you wake up, you live, eat, breathe this stuff. Before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit about your fundraiser. I know that has a passionate place in your heart. You've been doing it for 15 years, but maybe there might be somebody listening to this that either wants to get involved or get plugged in or understand more about it. So we'd love to make sure we share the word on that stuff.
Or help, yeah.
Talk to us about it. What is it? What's the organization? What are you doing with it? When is it?
Yeah.
And then for anybody listening, how do they get plugged into you so they can understand how to be a part of it?
Yeah. So there is a very large maritime event the first Friday of November every year in Hamburg. They pull about 5,000 people in. It was started after the Second World War by a handful of German shipbrokers that realized they need to rebuild Germany after the Second World War, and they have to work together on it. So they came together and they shared a meal this first Friday in November, and it's called Eisbein, which means pork knuckle, basically. And today they pulled 5,000 people in for that. So we started that tradition here in Houston about 15 years ago, actually. 25 ship owners came together and shared a meal and a couple of brews on a Friday. And then about 8 years ago, I partnered up with a woman, Miriam, and we turned it into a fundraiser. And now we have about 150 of the ship owners and operators based here in Houston that come together on that Friday, share a meal, and it's been going. People are retiring out. They're asking if they can come back and join again. It almost feels like a family reunion.
Nice.
And then what we raise there, we then donate to the ITMA, International Transportation Management Association, scholarship fund. And then we award scholarships to mostly the schools here in town or the students that attend the schools here in town.
Nice.
That are on a logistics track or maritime track or supply chain track. So yeah, that's it's a invitation only for ship owners and operators. So any ship owner okay. operators out there that is interested, you know, they absolutely reach out.
And so it's I Spine USA. Operator, if you're listening, yeah. this is
first it. Friday yeah. November. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So very, very exciting. Yeah.
That's I'd great. Love to meet a lot of ship owner operators, so I might sneak in a staff. Yeah. Give me the waiter and the best right, yeah. and stuff like that. So it'd be fantastic.
Yeah. So we get good support on it. Port Houston is one of our sponsors on it. Awesome. Yeah. So
great. Well, hey, you've been full of tremendous information today. I mean, I just love getting the background and better understanding what's taking place when it comes to the maritime space. You mentioned it. We have a lot of people come through here with construction and from the plants. It's always fun when maritime gets to join us. And you mentioned A&M. Just want to make sure we give a little plug to down the street, our San Jack Maritime Academy,
yeah.
which is actually a great facility. And we've actually hosted a few events at their location. So excited to have so much footprint across all these different industries. We really are a pillar of opportunity here in the U.S. right here in our backyard here in Houston, Texas. So, Thomas, you've been amazing. Love Thanks, the buddy. Value add. Really glad to have you. And for the rest of our audience, we would just want to encourage you always to tune in. Make sure that if you heard this show and it makes sense for you to share it with somebody else, that you pay it forward and you give them the information and you know get the message out. Make sure we tell people what's taking place in the reality of the things that are happening in our region and keep it positive news and message out about our mission, which is to really help grow a vibrant economy, which is just right here in our little backyard. So very thankful for that. So thanks, Thomas, Zeke. Glad to have you today.
Thank you, Thomas.
We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to go to the Economic Alliance Houston Port Region website and subscribe to our channels. And let's pay it forward by sharing the good news of what's happening in our region by passing this episode to somebody you know.